My name is Jeffrey Blankfort. I'm going to pass this on. I'm with the Coalition for Democratic Pacifica, and before that, I was with Take Back KPFA, and I'll explain something about the coalition when my chance to talk comes around.
This is just a brief introduction of everybody. My name is Mariah Gillarden. I was news volunteer at KPFA from 1980 on. I held several staff positions, including development director until 1988. I remained at the station as a women's department, which I helped co-found programmer, until 1993. When I raised questions about finances of the Pacifica Foundation, and I was immediately banned from all Pacifica stations in 1993. And I'm really glad to be here because you are the first who have lovingly accepted Lynn and myself in the first grassroots radio conference.
Hi, my name is Lynn Gary, and this is amazing to me because we came to the first GRC, Mariah, myself, Vince, and Tom, and we were shouting from the back of the room while a representative from Pacifica occupied the stage and debated Marty Durlin, and only Marty Durlin seemed to understand what Pacifica was about. The Pacifica representative didn't. Anyway, my name is Lynn Gary. I'm a former staff member of KPFK in Los Angeles, the Pacifica station there, both paid and unpaid. I was fired in 1995 in retaliation for speaking publicly about the events that have come to a head recently in full flower. These trends began many years ago, not a few months ago, as many of the media reports discuss, and we'll be getting into that. Thanks for being here.
My name is Dennis Bernstein. I was censored, fired, and arrested by Pacifica for telling the truth about their desire to sell KPFA and or WBAI. And I tell you, the handcuffs that they put on me that day, those are the high degree on my wall, the degree of higher education. I'll never forget what Pacifica did, and I'm here to tell you that we have a lot of work to hold this bunch accountable.
I'm Vince Ivory. I'm a former staff person at KPFK, and I believe now I'm a former volunteer. I'm not sure. They won't say that I'm fired, but my program hasn't been on in a while. And officially, they say it's going to be on this time, that time. It hasn't been on, so who knows? I'm also one of the founders of the Pacific Accountability Committee from January of 95. So again, what Lynn just said is absolutely accurate. This is not something that just happened a few months ago, nor is it some sort of viral infection that began in the Bay Area and is now spreading south. I really want to acknowledge the attention that has been paid to the Pacifica issues here and in the press, and all honor is due to those people in the Bay Area, such as Dennis and Jeffrey, who got themselves arrested. There are almost 100 now. Is that almost 100 people have been arrested in the course of the last few months in front of the KPFA building. Also, it helps that some 15,000 people actually demonstrated in Berkeley, which sort of gets public notice. And again, all honor is due. However, this has been something of a mixed blessing for us in us activists, particularly in the Pacific Accountability Committee, as people are coming out of the woodwork, out of the bushes to help, and some are slithering out from under rocks to try to help. But that's the subject of another discussion altogether. I really want to acknowledge what Lynn said earlier, that the Grassroots Radio Coalition went with us early on, the very first one in 1996, when this new organization was being formed. We were the only ones at the conference who were not actively working at a radio station, not actively representing a radio station at the conference. We were dissidents, and yet we were welcomed, and we really want to acknowledge that, and thank you very much, and thank you for putting on this panel and being concerned about these issues, because they really are your issues. Okay? Even though you're not directly working with a Pacifica station, this sort of thing can happen at your station. I don't see Kathy here, but Kathy Emilio gave the analogy of the frog being put into boiled water and immediately leaping out, and the alternative scenario whereby the frog is put into water and the water is gradually heated. And the frog does not recognize the danger. Let me outline some of the subtle things that have happened at KPFK and the other Pacifica stations that may well be happening where you are. The loss of community events. It doesn't sound like much. You know, KPFK used to have an annual winter fair. That's no longer around. Well, that doesn't seem like a crisis, does it? Okay? Heat goes up just a little bit. You've got a slow moving of funding sources away from the subscribers and toward the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, toward foundations, and toward large donors. Pacifica has this glorious 5-year plan that is a blueprint for making itself dependent on such donors. You should be mindful of this at the stations you're at, because it can happen there. Okay, we've got physical changes in the building. In KPFK right now, the walls are absolutely sterile, all white, the bulletin boards are all gone, all the character that used to be there is gone. Again, not a big thing, but should be an indicator. The heat is being turned up. We've got the loss of the printed program guide, a source of that feeling of community that we used to have at KPFK. Fortunately, the Pacifica Accountability Committee has moved in to fill the vacuum. We have the PAC folio doing what KPFK and Pacifica have refused to do. All 5 Pacifica stations now refuse to print a program guide because they don't want this sense of community. They won't say that. They'll say that consultants have told them that it's inefficient. They don't need that sort of thing. The reality is that the disposal of the folio disposes of the sense of community and the closeness to the community that real community radio, real grassroots radio needs to sustain itself. Then you see the proliferation of secret meetings, boards going into executive session to deal with personnel matters. We've reached a stage now at KPFK where basically anything having to do with Pacifica is considered to be a personnel matter, and therefore there's a gag rule. You can't talk about it on the air. In 1995, it reached a point where the Pacifica Accountability Committee was not allowed to have its phone number read on the air, even out of context. The phone number itself was enough to have a programmer thrown off the air. Okay, I know because I'm the one that was aimed at. Okay. Professionalization is a buzz phrase we've heard a lot this weekend and in previous grassroots radio conferences. But under the flag of professionalization, changes happen, changes in the character of the station. Again, small changes, turning up the heat just a bit, so you don't know that your radio station is really going through major changes. But I can tell you that by the time the changes have actually taken place, by the time you really recognize what's happened, that water is really hot. And then you're in the position that we're all in now, having to take something back that we once had. Okay? Boards, advisory boards, boards of directors. Some of you probably tolerate a situation whereby these boards function largely as window dressing. They're really an annoyance, but for the purposes of getting CPB funding, for the purposes of at least creating the illusion that you've got ties with the community, you let them go. You let them have their meetings. They're largely ignored. This is dangerous. This is really dangerous to create these illusions, even if you're only deceiving yourself. If you don't have that community connection, there's no point in putting up a facade board, because it's going to come back to bite you. Sooner or later, either the individuals on these boards are going to get tired of just using them as a resume, or somebody's going to focus some real attention on them and reveal them for the frauds that they are. Okay. These are all lessons that we've learned. I'm sure in the course of our discussion now we're going to come up with others, but these are subtle things that you can see in your everyday walking around your stations if you look hard enough. And if you take nothing away from what I've said today but this, please look at your own stations and remember it can happen. It can happen here. It can happen anywhere if you're not paying attention.
Thank you, Vince. I did a couple of programs over the years at KPFA and was around the station since the early 80s. I was a guest on a number of shows, and I knew Pat Scott, the former general manager and then executive director, who was probably largely responsible as much as anybody for what's happened to Pacifica, was once a friend of mine. I attended a staff meeting in December 1992 to make some complaint about the news department, which I still have some complaints about. And that night, both Mariah, who was on the staff then, and myself saw something called a strategy for national programming, which had been prepared by Gail Christian, who was a national program director for Pacifica. And this document called on the expanding the major donor list, setting up different tiers of donors. But in the appendix was a report by Development Director Dick Bunce, which called on Pacifica to radically change its history and roots from being the first listener-sponsored radio station in America to becoming more like a junior NPR, to go after $300,000 grants from the Pew Charitable Trust, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the MacArthur Foundation, according to Bunce, to be a player on the same field as NPR, and to tailor our application according to their guidelines, which is antithetical to what Pacifica and KPFA, with all its warts, had stood for. So that was the beginning of something called Save KPFA. Not coincidentally, at the same time, all the programmers who programmed the public affairs programs after 7 o'clock at night, after the evening news, received an informal one-paragraph Dear Programmer letter from Pat Scott saying that they had lost their programs and were going to have to reapply for whatever program time. And also Dennis's Flashpoints, which came on the air in 1991 during the Iraq War, which is the essence of what Pacifica should be and has been as radio, was also threatened with going off the air. In January, however, in the office that was to become Pacifica in later years, there was a mass meeting held of staff and listener supporters in a pouring rainstorm, one of the most exciting evenings I ever attended, in which the staff and community railed against Scott to such a point where Scott lost her position, was sent up by David Solniker, the executive director, to lobby in Washington, and the program that were going to be canceled, that letter was rescinded. In 1995, Pat was back as executive director. They had a new general manager, and she was ready to strike. In May of that year, Bill Mandel, who had been on the air for 30 years, was removed from a slot on the morning show because he decided to challenge a critical column by a liberal columnist in the Chronicle criticizing affirmative action. And Bill, instead of talking about the Soviet Union or East Europe, which was his specialty, decided to challenge that column on the air because he didn't notify the producer or the morning show hosts of his change of topic. He was removed from the show. 2 weeks later, he still had a twice a month Sunday show on Soviet Union, East Europe, Russian East Europe. He decided to break the gag rule and tell people what had happened to him because people wondered why he was not on the morning show. You know, when someone's kicked off the air in Pacifica, there's no mention of their name. They're like non-person, like being erased from a photograph. So Bill went on the air and talked about why he had been taken off the air and gave my number for people to call. My phone rang off the hook. He broke the gag rule, quote unquote, the gag rule, dirty laundry, no dirty laundry, and was removed from the air. There was a protest, 100 people showed up, but they got away with it. And in August of 95, right after the marathon, the fundraiser, a mass purge took place. A new image called Radio with a Vision came on Pacifica, and purges took place all over the network except for BAI in New York, where there was resistance. And at that time, Take Back KPFA was formed. There was a large meeting, first of staff, 400 people showed up. We had hundreds of people coming to our meetings. Nevertheless, the time was really not ripe, but Pacifica had a plan in mind, and that plan was exercised in February when the local advisory board members were removed from the national board through collusion with the CPB. And here is an interesting thing. Pacifica is supposed to be an alternative radio network. And yet, in 1995, when I and two people from Houston, former of the Houston station, were disallowed from attending a Pacifica meeting that was supposed to be an open board meeting outside of Houston, at a resort in which Pennzoil was in one room, the Bear Company that makes Bear Aspirin in another room, and Pacifica was in the middle, three corporate boards meeting. Current magazine, the Public Organ, wrote an article about this meeting being closed to us. Inspector from the Inspector General's office of the CPB started an investigation. 17 days later, he was fired, told to clear out his desk. The next investigator from the CPB was the number two man, Mike Donovan. He told me that he was going to make a very strong report because we made a complaint against Pacifica for their closed meetings and secrecy, and he was going to justify everything we said. He was going to put out a report the first week in February. I taped a conversation with him in December in which he said what he was going to do. In January, he said, next week there'll be a report. I called the following week, where's the report? Mike Donovan has been fired. The CPB was protecting Pacifica. Finally, we got an inspector general who did make a report. He came out to interview us. Pacifica gave him the cold shoulder, wouldn't open the books to him. He then made a report critical of Pacifica, justifying what we said. I went back to the CPB board meeting, and the chairman of the board had already made a report in which he totally contradicted what his own inspector general had said, saying that Pacifica has been found, you know, faultless, and they welcome Pacifica, and now that inspector general is gone. When Robert Coonrod, who is now the inspector general of the CPB, the former deputy director of President of the CPB, the former deputy director of the Voice of America, and the head of Radio TV Marti, which beams U.S. propaganda to Cuba, in April of 1998, when Pat Scott, who was formerly a member of the Communist Party and public about it, mind you, when she announced her retirement effective October, Mr. Coonrod issued a press statement praising Pat as being someone who's brought Pacifica back into the public radio realm. Now, if Mr. Coonrod said that about me, I would sue him or I'd commit harakiri. But this is what Pacifica has become. They are a partner with the CPB. Then in September, Pat was not gone yet, she called Mr. Coonrod and said, are we in compliance with our governance? Knowing what the answer would be. Coonrod sent a letter saying, it appears that your governance is in variance with the CPB bylaws. Pacifica gave this to their lawyer, John Kriegler, who works with the CPB as well. He wrote a letter saying that CPB is correct, even though Pacifica has had the same governance structure for years, which allows local board members to be on the national board and to nominate members of the national board because we don't have any local governing boards. Otherwise, there'd be no connection to the local stations. Two local boards, WBAI and KPFA, voted not to approve the bylaw amendment that Pacifica wanted to pass. And in Los Angeles, they assumed that the two local board members on the national board would vote against it. Just before, the day before the national board meeting, a letter came from Rick Madden of the CPB, the vice president, saying that if Pacifica didn't take this vote, they'd lose half a year's funding. And all the local board members caved in and voted to change the bylaw amendment, disenfranchising the local boards, which turns out to be in violation of California corporate law, which is now subject to a lawsuit. The night before she was fired, Nicole Sawaya, who was fired because she spoke truth to the listeners, truth to the staff, truth to the local board, and truth about Pacifica, acknowledged at the local board meeting that the whole deal was a collusion between Pacifica and the CPB. And she was fired the next day. So we're up against a major conspiracy between people who run Pacifica and the people who run the corporation of public broadcasting. And this is one of the things I wanted to bring to you today. Every station that gets CPB money isn't infected like this, but Pacifica reaches one out of every five households. So this is one of the issues in our struggle today. Thank you very much.
Again, my name is Dennis Bernstein, and I bring you greetings from the first free speech, listener-supported, non-commercial, unfettered, non-corporate radio station in the world, KPFA, founded by people who went to jail to resist the war machine, to speak truth to power. I'm here to tell you, by the way, first of all, I'm honored to be here with all my brothers and sisters in this alternative community radio arena. I think we play a special part in restraining the corporate drumbeat of the growing conglomerates that control the word. You know, they tell you as a sort of a limitation of free speech and the First Amendment, they tell you that you can't shout fire in a crowded theater. I agree with that. But if there's a fire in that theater and you do not shout, you do not open your mouth, then you have to live with the responsibility of your own silence. I tell you now, there is a fire in this theater called Pacifica, and we need to be aware of it. Now, I want to paint a picture, and I want to be very clear that I'm not using hyperbole what I'm about to outline for you. There was, no question, an attempted corporate raid on community radio and on Pacifica. There's no question about that. Why do I say that? Why do I say it's not hyperbole? Well, let's just look at the structure they put in place to now, essentially, Pacifica now has from going truth to power, they're using power to crush truth, you know, speaking truth to power. They're now defining a new, setting a standard in censorship. Let me tell you what they did. They hired a corporate downsizing attorney. They hired a human resource director from a firm that specializes in downsizing and hostile takeovers. That man, Gene Edwards, hired a hostile termination force called IPSA International. How many of you have heard of them? Good, I want to tell you a little bit about them. If you go to their website, you find out that they specialize in hostile terminations, in downsizing, in meeting the needs of the new corporate executive that traditional law enforcement cannot meet. They boast of having military-trained sharpshooters. So, Pacifica hired a downsizing, union-breaking lawyer, a downsizing human resource director who hired a downsizing private police force with extensive intelligence backgrounds in the FBI, the CIA, and other national security institutions. All this documented. I'm an investigative reporter. All this documentary evidence. Check out their website. Then what did they do? They hired the firm that also represents Walt Disney to represent, you know, the slave laborers, the people who support slave labor, who make money on slave labor, to represent Pacifica. So we had, I guess, Pacifica standing side by side with Mickey Mouse. And then what did they do? On June 20th or thereabouts, they changed the address of Pacifica. We were wondering, why aren't we getting mail? June 21st, they took away our door codes. June 26th, a very interesting day. Dr. Mary Frances Berry is in Washington meeting with a delegation of our people from the community, from the staff, and she's talking to our community people about reconciliation. On that very day, when she's making that public statement about reconciliation, this armed private police force from IPSA International seized KPFA Remember all our door codes. We had no mail, no way to enter the station. So how did that look from the ground up? On Friday, our music director left with equipment to record a jazz concert, Chewy Varela. Comes back on Saturday, when Barry Francis Berry is in Washington talking conciliation, facing six armed men who refused to identify themselves, asking Chewy to identify himself and sign in. He worked there 15 years. Sign in. He was informed at that point that now, from there on in, radio producers could have only one guest. This is a written memo from Lynn Chadwick. Written memo from Lynn Chadwick. Imagine, Sunday morning, the early morning host comes in, Mary Berg. She's got a duet scheduled. How does that headline read? Six armed guards foil duet at Free Speech Radio. One of the duet, I kid you not, was turned away. Does that sound like Free Speech Radio? People, by the way, wondered, were these guards armed and dangerous? Gene Edwards, the human resource director, the downsizing, the guy who says he was there to hire and fire, said that they were armed. He hired them because they were armed. I interviewed him about this. I've got it on tape, transcribed. He hired them because they were recommended by other corporations. They could do the job. Were they dangerous? Well, Pacifica also, we're going to tell you how dangerous they are and how that manifests. Pacifica also, in the beginning of June, ordered equipment to change the transmitter so that they could stream in programming from undisclosed locations. And they went up on a certain day and changed and altered the transmitter so that programming Muzak and old tapes were streamed in from an undisclosed location, we think Houston. There were KPFA supporters, and they have been extraordinary, and I have to be honest with you, I spent a good deal of yesterday crying, listening to testimony, particularly from the public, because there was a state hearing about this, to hear the courage, the intelligence, the eloquence of our listeners. Some of those listeners went up to the transmitter, which is up in the Berkeley Hills, to defend the transmitter. One of those people, Karen Pickett, who works for Earth First, a former colleague of the late Judy Berry, good friend of all of ours, was strangled to the ground by one of these IPSA internationals hired by Pacifica Free Speech Radio. Are they dangerous? Well, we got a picture of that. We got videotape of that. Her being strangled down by people hired by Pacifica. Downsizing law firm. Downsizing human resource director. Hostile termination force. And then what? And then what happened? I'm going to try and wrap this up quickly. I just want to make sure people understand we're not talking hyperbole and we're not making up stories. All documented. On July 12th, Dr. Mary Frances Berry comes to town, surprise visit, calls a selected press briefing. She holds it in a downtown Oakland hotel. She assures the selected press, which didn't end up to be the selected press because we found out about it, the community showed up. Can you imagine? There I was, inside, because I got there early, they couldn't throw me out, interviewing eight journalists, local community board members, who were being kept out of that meeting. And it's me with my microphone saying, hey, what are you doing out there? The press conference is in here. And Alain Fabre, the now terminated press spokesperson, she got the reputation as the fabricator. Alain Fabre tries to grab my tape recorder and my microphone out of my hands. She goes to put her hand up over another television camera to stop this, a press secretary. Can you imagine if Chevron did that to Amy Goodman? Would that be a part of the story? You bet it would. That, by the way, that cameraman later referred to her as the new Goebbels of Pacifica.
But that's hyperbole. That was just his comment. Everything else, fact. But it was a good comment. Dr. Berry has this unbelievable press conference. It was the Twilight Zone, where she says, she's asked, has there been any discussion about selling KPFA or WBAI? She laughed. Absolutely not. She laughed at the press, as she lied to the press, as far as I'm concerned, in my opinion. The next day, there's an emergency staff meeting at 2 o'clock. At the same time, there's a press conference being held by Media Alliance at 2 o'clock that day. In the emergency staff meeting, we're introduced to our new acting manager, Garland Ganter, the manager from Houston. He's there with the archivist, or the guy who works in the archives, Mark Torres from Los Angeles. They're there to tell us that if we violate the gag rule, they're gonna drag us, what they said is they're gonna take us off the air. Garland Ganter said that. I asked in that little very troubling staff meeting where Lynn Chadwick, Gene Edwards, the hire and fire man was there, I asked, imagine, and you all can appreciate this better than any audience I have ever spoken to, the pathetic question that I asked. But I asked it. I said, Mr. Ganter, will we be allowed here at KPFA on my Flashpoints alternative investigative news magazine, will I be allowed to report that which is widely reported in the mainstream? Yes, he said. Yes, he said, with 30 witnesses. My best witness is Lynn Chadwick. At 5 o'clock that day, 5:45 that day, after playing 40 minutes of a report back on the Unity Conference of the 6,000 to 9,000 journalists of color in Seattle, I played a 15-minute clip of a public press conference held by Media Alliance in which they released an email they had obtained from board member, national board member Michael Palmer in Houston, same place where Garland Ganter was from, incidentally, to Dr. Berry with two extraordinary things in that email. How many have seen that? I have copies in my car in case you want to look at it closely. There were two things that were said in that email. One was that haven't we all agreed that it's time to shut down and reprogram KPFA? And the other was a long discussion that obviously reflected ongoing discussions about the sale of KPFA or BAI. I played 15 minutes of a public press conference in which you heard mainstream reporters. Remember Garland, can I do that story? You heard the mainstream reporters on the tape asking the questions about the email. After playing that 15-minute clip of a press conference, I was greeted at my studio door by Garland Ganter, who said, evacuate the building immediately. You violated the gag order. Get out of here. And those armed guards were there ready to throw me out like some drunk at a bar. I said, yeah, I'll be right there. I have another news story, though. I have to report to the news department. And I headed upstairs. The newscast had begun. Tracked by Mr. Ganter, who's grabbing at me, all eyewitnesses, most of this videotaped. We're going to start streaming that on the web so some people who are doubtful of what happened can see it with their own eyes. Tracked in there, him, this bouncer from Houston, you know, the white guy from Houston who had already cleansed the Houston station with a strategic plan to diversify KPFA. A lot of white men had jobs. They were all security force people. Got a lot of white men have been hired by Pacifica in the last several months, I tell you, for around-the-clock work. In any event, they track me into this news studio. The news is playing a tape of a HMO story. I was backed up against the tape. The broadcast got interrupted, and Mark Miracle went live with what was going on in the studio. And you could hear, and I'm sure some of you have, heard me screaming at these guys to keep their guns in their holsters and trying to sort of remind them where they were, that this was a pacifist radio station founded by people who went to jail to resist war. And then I decided, in the tradition of our founder and others, to sit down. And I sat there, and I thought about all the things, all the 15 years of privileged broadcasting, and I thought about some of the high points. I really do want to tell you this story. I hope I can. I thought about the kids that I taught in the South Bronx in a high school for dropouts and teen parents who I was teaching media, who one day came in and told me that they had heard shots through the ceiling of their housing project, where there was a, let's call it a 12-gauge shotgun eviction of a 67-year-old arthritic grandmother who was late on the rent. And so they sent a SWAT team in with shields and mace and shotguns and shot her to death twice at close range. And my kids reported that story. They went back, we reported it, and we brought it to WBAI. And they changed the character of the story. The woman was already being demonized in the mainstream press. That's what this has to do with us. Already being demonized in the mainstream press. And they broke the story that she was a trusted babysitter until she had been hit by this arthritis. And their investigation that they broke over WBAI got the cops indicted. And I saw in this instance, as I sat there in my mind's eye, I saw kids, instead of having one more violent experience jammed down inside of them, I saw them be given their own power, hear the voices of their own power, coming alive. One of those kids is a journalist today. And I, as I sat there in that newsroom, I heard something else which was real and not in my mind. That was a growing crowd chanting. First it sounded like 50 people, then it sounded like 150, and then it sounded like a lot of people, a lot of angry people who came to stand for their free speech alternative to the corporate drumbeat, because it means so much to them and to all of us. And I cannot tell you how moved I have been from that moment to this moment in terms of the amount of support 15 to 20,000 people came to Berkeley to march for their radio station. You need to trust your listeners, and I know you do. You need to tell them the truth. If you trust your listeners, if you tell them the truth, if you give them the information about what happens and make them a part of it, they understand, usually better than all of us, before all of us, how important this medium is, how to defend it, how to fight for it, how to vote for it. That's what this is about. I'm going to say one final thing. We need to strengthen our own community control. We need, those of you who are way ahead of us with elected boards, I applaud you. We need to strengthen those community boards. When I see, for instance, in Los Angeles, where they're trying to attack the local board, discredit it, referring to board members as, what was the phrase?
Parasites.
Parasites for standing up, for speaking truth to power. I can tell you who I'm beginning to think the parasites are. And it's not the people in the community boards, in the local audience. It's the people at the top at Pacifica. And because they have shown so much disrespect for the staff. Oh, by the way, you remember the memo says lockdown reprogram? Well, as you know, I was arrested and dragged out of my own newsroom for telling the truth. The next day, the entire staff and community was locked out, station boarded up, chained up with these 6 to 9 intelligence cops with free rein of our Rolodexes and secure sources roaming the station. This board, this chairman, this leadership fired the staff. They fired the community. They turned their back on free speech radio. And for that kind of disrespect, it's time for them to step down, stand aside, and give it over to people who really care about the medium. I'm sorry for going on all that long, but that's what I wanted to tell you today.
So what, Dennis? I mean, don't you think Democracy Now! Is a great program? Do you know that there are only 700,000 listeners to Pacifica Radio? I mean, don't you think you deserve that over there? That's the type of response that the management of Pacifica has been making to these issues. And I know that a lot of you at your stations have grappled with these issues. And the thing that I'd like to say, this thing is called Beyond Pacifica, but it really should be called Beyond the 5-Year Plan, Beyond the Healthy Station Project, Beyond the viewing of community radio as some entertainment medium where listeners are some commodity, some faceless, numberless commodity. The people who listen to a radio station and the people who broadcast from a radio station should be part of some permeable membrane. Partners, a yin-yang in a whole. It's about an integrity of communication in the public interest. And that is the real objection to the 5-year plan, the Healthy Station Project, and the direction that the CPB is forcing community radio into. And that's what this whole struggle at Pacifica has been about. There have been a lot of specific features, and a lot of these folks have covered the facts. So I want to get to the bottom line, in a sense, which has to do with funding. Somebody asked me during one of the breaks, they said, well, you know, if they fire all the listeners, how are they gonna fund this thing until they get a new audience? And we said, listen, if they can sell WBAI, the interest, if they put it in a bunch of CD bank accounts, will be more money than the listener sponsors now contribute to the entire budget of Pacifica. Is the purpose of Pacifica to raise a bigger and bigger budget? Is the purpose of Pacifica to say, hey, we have all of these listeners, well, 700,000 listeners are not enough, we must have 5 million or 10 million listeners? Well, the question has to go to, for what purpose do you want these people to listen? Is it because you can sell at higher advertising rates? Is it because that you think that perhaps you want to indoctrinate them in a particular manner? None of this was what Pacifica's founding was about. It was about integrity of communication. And I want to go back to Lewis Hill's theory of listener sponsorship, which was the genesis of KPFA that has now seen these abominations over the past couple of months, just to remind everybody that integrity of communication is a real purpose of community radio. Why it was needed, because there was no integrity of communication in a medium that was either controlled by commercial interests or controlled by government interests. Then it could not be an independent voice, and that was because of the bottom line of its funding. And I say this because I really want people who are taking underwriting now to look at it. I really want people to look at their CPB funding and ask themselves if it's having a negative impact on their ability to have integrity of communication. And I know people have a lot of different financial means and problems. I'm not saying you must do this. I'm just saying I want you to ask the question and examine your own circumstances and see what's happening to your stations as a result of these funding sources. The reason that Hill said that listener sponsorship is the only solution was because he saw it as a guard against corruption. And what we're hearing, what we've heard from Dennis, that everyone has spoken about here today, that corruption really is an umbrella word for what is happening. A desire to manipulate people rather than to have honest communication. And Hill wanted something that was very different from what was available. And this is a story that he wrote about in his theory of listener sponsorship that I think needs to be told again and again. He described how announcers were hired at that time in radio and probably still today in the commercial arena. They were given a paragraph of meaningless information, grammatically correct English, but without meaning. And they were told to simulate different emotional states when reading it. Read this as if it's tragic. Read this as if it's a piece of news. Read this as if it's humorous. Read this with punch. And the one who could most successfully simulate an emotional state which they did not feel about content which was meaningless was the one who was given the job. And that's not what community radio is about. And I need everyone to ask this question. If your funding sources are corrupt and manipulative, be it whether from the commercial sector or from the government, which has its own agenda, and that was laid out in the Carnegie Report, they were worried the intelligentsia was not going to receive the proper amount of propaganda because they were tuning out of commercial media because it was too stupid. So they wanted something a little more highbrow so they could get the message about what a great society we were in and, you know, aren't we happy campers? And that was the genesis for government funding of radio. They didn't do it to be nice. They did it because they had an agenda. So, yes, well, maybe everyone has an agenda, but I would say, that along with Dennis, that I trust the agenda of a bunch of individual people in my community giving $20 to a radio station to get information above and beyond any other source, even if it claims that there are no strings attached. Thank you.
In some ways, one of the best things that happened to me was being banned from Pacifica, because it threw me out into the world, and it threw me out among you, and I found a different way of doing radio at home on a computer. I found a different way of connecting to listeners via your great stations. I want to thank you again for that. And I hope you offer the opportunity to many others as well. It also threw me into the world in a way that I wish really any radio producer could do. It threw me onto a journey across this country, a repeated journey onto many visits of Indian reservations. It showed me the land as it shows itself now, violated and totally devastated, which we don't usually see because we either live in the cities or we live on our islands. But if you begin to walk from A to B, you see how terrible it looks already. Even if you fly home from here, look out the window, look down on the earth, what we have done to her. So this whole Pacifica event, everybody has said all the factual information that I could give you, that I have lived and give you, to me really very much connects to every one of you and connects to the times we're living in. What seemed to me at first instinctively the issue to look at, the imposition of the market, the dominance of world trade, the expansion of the GATT and the World Trade Organization, the institution that now has power over our laws, our environmental laws, our social and labor laws, the WTO, the loss of sovereignty, both on a national, on a state, and even on a local level, to find the recycling laws of California as a hindrance to trade listed by the European Union is truly shocking, because here is the second biggest, most powerful chunk of accumulated countries eyeing with an evil eye our humble efforts to recycle our bottles, because that recycling effort would be a hindrance of trade. So the attack on community radio in its most outrageous form, explained here with Pacifica, is part of that story that we're all living now, of the commodification of our lives and of the rounding up of what we used to call the commons, what used to be our public lands, our public services, our public education. Even our national parks are being auctioned off little by little, microbe by microbe. You can even buy a Monopoly game now to have your children learn how to auction off, sell off national parks. Have you seen that? So the nonprofit sector as a whole is under attack within that. And especially its most powerful and most rich areas, rich in goodwill, rich in good people, rich in great trees. So there are corporate raiders going around looking at nonprofits to raid, and the nonprofit may be your station. It may be a place for some managerial clique that was trained by the CPB or in NPR training sessions to find themselves lifetime jobs and send all of you volunteers or unpaid staff home. That is truly happening, and it's truly a sign of the time. That this is overall embedded in a loss of the commons is also devastating for us and should inspire our opposition in every respect. Because this is the last domain to make a stand. This is the last voice we have. There is no more media that is accessible to us. You all know that. The print media will give us maybe a column here and there, and we are so grateful if it's not all full of lies, aren't we? And yes, you know, it is nice to see a picture of the of the genetically altered corn chopped down. That was actually a wonderful picture in your local paper. Another roundup of the commons which is our bodies, which is our food, which ought to be resisted, and I'm really glad people are taking these initiatives, because they are taking it in England and in Europe. To rely on the print media is relatively hopeless. To rely on all alternative papers is wonderful, but they don't go very far, and we're killing an awful lot of trees in the process of getting them out. Radio is the last opportunity to find people freely, really freely. I mean, the free speech has two dimensions here. It is not only the free speech as defined here by Dennis and the constitutional right of free speech. It is the freedom of moving through the air and falling onto somebody's ears who has not expected to hear it. And it's something we should never, never forget when we do our, when we speak on the radio. And I need to remind myself often of that myself. There is somebody listening who has never listened before, and that one person needs to be felt welcome and needs to be drawn into the conversation, and we need to not take it for granted that they know what we're talking about. So to welcome people who are participating in this free exchange is really, really important. So I guess our appeal is not only to help us fight this battle with Pacifica, and you are extraordinarily important in that because you can write you as so-called affiliates. You do have a powerful voice in this, but it is also to remind you in a way what treasure, what a great treasure is in your stewardship, and to see, to learn from this experience what not to do, and to cherish every moment you have that you're not being dragged off the air by armed guards or not violated by some outrageously misplaced board. And that is really all I want to say. I send you all my love, and I hope you have great success and great care of your own stations as you go home and do radio, and don't let it be taken away from you.